Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host of the Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Ricky Addington and Josh Ginn.
Where is my Dark Angels Codex?
Good evening, everybody.
Yo, you know, Dark Angels may be getting some love pretty soon. You know, one never knows. You just have to listen to the whispers on the wind.
We are a shadowy bunch.
We're going to talk about more Space Marine stuff as we kind of hinted at in our last episode. What would hint? We did our initial first pass of the Space Marines Codex. And of course, we have the White Scar supplement and the Ultramarine supplement in our hands. I got to talk about this Invictor Dreadnought. And I'm spelling that last knot as N-O-T.
Like you should.
I mean, think about it. The disrespect of all the people that all the Space Marines that had to expire or come close to expiring to get in an iron sarcophagus. And this dude just gets to ride around like it's his birthday.
I do not care for this model. And the only thing I care for less is how much I love his rules.
Well, the model's starting to grow on me. I think that the way I was a little bit taken aback when I saw him holding the heavy bolter as a pistol, and then I couldn't unsee him drawing down the heavy bolter. But, you know, it's got some good rules. Fully loaded, and that's the upgrade to the autocannon. You're looking at 136 points. If you go with the flamer, the incendium cannon, it's 131 points. And that 131 points gets you two heavy stubbers, a heavy bolter, a 2d6 shot, 12-inch, basically heavy flamer, the fragstorm grenade launcher, so another 2d6 hits from that, and then the fist. The Invictor fist is neg 3 AP with a flat 3 damage.
So what do you think it's replacing?
Any other heavy flamer dreadnought ever?
So, but to be in the competitive sense, like, when's the last time anyone saw something like that?
Okay, what this thing can do is it has concealed positions. So when you set up this model during deployment, it can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 9 inches away from the enemy deployment zone and any enemy models. So you can put it up in people's grill, and so it basically has to be dealt with, and it's got some defense against being charged itself. I mean, it can if you're within 12, in order to be able to declare a charge, this thing can overwatch you with its 2d6 auto-hit gun.
Problem for, like, Gene Steeler Colt and armies that want to be always charging you, right? That's where we're going.
I mean, it can put a little bit of a crimp in, I think, anybody's step. I mean, the things that come down, I mean, you're not going to be wiping out, like, full 10 or 20-man, 30-man berserker squads or bloodletters, but you are going to significantly reduce the amount of attacks you're going to be receiving, even if you do get caught out there in the middle of nowhere.
And it's going to be a good deterrent. You know, just like, you know, we use scout squads and stuff up there in the front to push people back. The scary thing has always been, well, if the scouts get charged, they're gone, right? But this war suit is just, what, 130 some points. And if you charge it, you're going to have to eat 2d6 flamer shots or heavy flamer shots. And then let's say you make it into combat with it. The thing still has four strength 14 attacks that it's going to do back to you if you don't kill it.
Yeah, so you also I mean, you've got not just the auto hits, but you've got all these other random hits that you're going to squeak in, you know, some marginal amount of additional stuff.
So you like
stuff.
It better than two scout squads?
I really do, yeah. This thing being toughness 6, and so that and a 3+ armor save. It is a heavy, the guns on it are heavy, so if you do have to move it, like, that's another hit against the
make a good point. Cannon. So if it's first turn and you scout it up forward and you receive everything at -1 because it's Devastator Protocols. It's even less optimal to want to charge it on the first turn.
Oh, with the APs and stuff like that?
Yeah.
It's just good.
Yeah, it checks off all the boxes. It's affordable points-wise, has a ton of shots, and it's something it forces your opponent to have to deal with it. Like, they can't really ignore this thing to just let it run around and do what it feels like doing.
And now I see why people are going to be talking about Iron Hands being the default, because stuff like this, not degrading, and then having saves against mortal wounds and whatnot could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like we talked about with, you know, Haywire not being near as big of a problem for these guys. You know, that's always been the big threat is, you know, vehicles die so easily. Now the vehicles are so tough. He can get where he needs to be. You can easily deploy him in cover. He's got so many things working for him. The only thing I really want to know is, can I replace that brush guard of a cockpit with just can I stick a sarcophagus in there and make it look like a dreadnought?
I mean, I haven't seen. I haven't seen the model. I don't know how it compares to the Redemptor dreadnought.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that they both have 13 wounds, with 13 wounds, it is almost double the wounds of a regular dreadnought. The regular dreadnoughts are still at 8 wounds, and the Contender dreadnoughts at 10 wounds. That means even at T6, it's a pretty durable beast.
Yeah. I mean,
it sounds viable. I'm not going to sit here and be like naysay it. It sounds like it's not, I don't know if it's the best choice out there, but it definitely has a slot. And something I've been struggling with is I don't know if the Marine Codex is going to have straight up best shots, right? Like, I don't know if everyone's going to have their favorites, I think, but the way that they've layered the doctrines as well as the stratagems, it seems like there's not a lot of payoff if you go heavy if you weight your army and skew it in the first turn towards all the Devastator protocols, and then because then your opponent can say, okay, well, let me just avoid those shots and take out his assault elements, and then I know I'm safe in the later rounds because once I get into him, you know what I'm saying? Like, it almost is like pushing you towards wanting to have a blended army in some way. And I don't think that they've done a pretty careful job of not making it so you can just skew one way super hard.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what they've done, but that's exactly what they should do because it's thematic, balanced, it's Space Marines, right? Is we should have a little bit of everything, and these are great, but we also got to think about the fact that they're elites, and with Space Marines, you're going to want that chaplain, you may want the apothecary or whatever, and you've got other elite choices that may get eaten up. I mean, aggressor, like I think you're bonkers to not have aggressors now. So remember, that's going to eat up some of those slots as well. So you got to figure out how you're going to fit them in there.
But the real boon to even being a Marine player right now, I think, beyond just competitive, having a more competitive book, is that beyond sort of maybe the HQ choice, if you want to skew in that direction, no one is talking about taking three of X, right? I mean, people may have a favorite, but I think a lot of the discussions are people are cherry picking from categories now to do a very specific thing with a stratagem in mind or a shaping effect with something else in the army, to get a desired result. You know what I'm saying? It's not it's not just three Lord Discordance and then ramming firepower down somebody's throat with underpriced Forge World units. It's like people are like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to layer my army this way, and this is going to support this. I'm going to shoot this and then this stratagem and have this, this, and this. And when they do this, I'm going to have this. That people are like, obviously we're all figuring out all the combos, but I'm excited. Well, first time I've been excited for Marines in a long time. So
it sounds like people might actually win games during the game now instead of just bringing the list.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
40K is in a great spot right now. So we'll see that stuff happen, especially with stuff like Marines. When Marines are more viable, it's like when Chaos is a strong threat. People love it. When Marines are viable, people are going to love it. They're going to really tool up. And the chapter tactics allow for some of this customization. Like, I've been building around some Black Templar stuff. I mean, it's kind of like it's like my fifth tier hobby project is I really want a really strong Black Templar list, probably because I just love Assault. Who doesn't? Yeah. But before the show, we were talking about how to build a really good brigade.
No. Let's be clear here. Paul was talking about how to build a really good brigade.
Yeah. We struggled with building.
That's where I'm going, is that with Marines, we found it to be pretty difficult because you get three of these things, two of these things, you get a bunch of stuff. But it wasn't what I would consider a real cohesive threat or something that built off enough synergies with each other. I think you're really going to be looking at like a battalion, maybe even two battalions, or a battalion in a patrol, or a battalion in a flyer wing or something to fill up your 2,000 points.
So I guess skip ahead to the answer. We'll go to the list obviously here in a second, but is there something in your mind's eye that you wanted those command points for? Obviously everyone loves command points. It's a limited resource. It gives you, access to abilities. We all understand what they do, but we don't even have, the Imperial Fist book yet. We know the successor's abilities. Is there, beyond having, what was driving you to want to have a brigade's worth of command points? Cause it feels like what they're doing is trying to give you battalion, double battalion worth of command points and making you set up a key turn, right? Like you're building, like we're talking a layered army with certain capabilities. And then in your mind's eye, you're always going to want to have a pocket X number of command points to do your combo.
That's an interesting discussion. So with command points, you've got to assume that you're, I shouldn't say you've got to, but you kind of should assume that you're going to go into a game with four or five less command points for the stratagems, for the specific stratagems that you want. Because you're going to be doing things like potentially burning prepare positions or the command rerolls, you know, you're going to be burning those types of command points. So you're starting out of the gate four and or five down from using your specialty stratagems.
I think that people are going to have to learn to not do those things that they've been accustomed to doing because they've had the guard command point crutches.
Yeah, maybe so. But I'm saying anytime you build a list, that's what you have to. So, you know, that guard list that I talked about for so long, you know, at the start of the game, I had, you know, six command points or whatever, but I knew that, like, I already knew that, you know, I'm going to use crush them for a couple turns. And so I've got four command rerolls I can do. Like, that's basically how it works. But I'm saying that you go, but that was four command points down with the command rerolls or, you know, assassin takes up one. You know, you can't really do the assassin in the and keep your doctrines and stuff here in the Space Marine Codex. Keep that in mind. So, but a lot of people are going into it or are not necessarily respecting the fact that you are going to be burning those command points in that fashion. So if you want to do your sexy stuff, your sweet stuff that's specific to your army, then you're going to need more than maybe you think.
Let's be honest. I'm using transhuman physiology every phase until I'm at zero command points.
And see, that's two apiece. And then Auspex scan is two. There's a strong case to burn an additional command point to give someone, a chaplain and an additional warlord trait. So, okay. You know, you get for multiple warlord traits throughout your army. So that, you know, there are, I mean, we just talked about some cool things and that's already spent five command points.
So then let me ask you, just the quintessential, your take on Marines so far. Do you think that the Marine Codex as is should be approached from a list building perspective where I am building my army to do X in conjunction with a set number of command points that I'm always going to have on hold? Like, I'm just going to put them in a separate little dice cup for turn three, because I know that's when my army is going to do its gimmick, right? Where it's trick, whatever it is. Or do you think that the book itself right now has the horsepower inherent to the units as they're pointed, you know, competitively, that you can burn command points the way you guys just said, like, hey, I'm always going to be doing X and I'm just going to rely on the horsepower inherent in a unit of Terminators or, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Thankfully, Marines are still Marines and they're very forgiving. Another kind of thing in that favor, in that line, is that a lot of things got an additional wound. So even more forgiving, even when the power armor and cover doesn't save you.
Right. But I guess what I'm saying is I think that the high level players will have the most success when they can do what I said, right? When they really pick their list to do a thing.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, there is going to be things that you can't unleash the beast on. And there's all kind of stuff that you can stack up with your chaplains and psychic powers and stuff to do that range. But where I'm going with this is that the Marines itself are going to be less casual command point reliant. So you're like prepare positions may not necessarily be a thing because you have smaller units. You can be in cover, and you've got, which taking your armor saves likely to a two instead of a three, and you've got multiple wounds to fall back on. So you've got, you have a yes. need to, or less of a need to burn those,
inherent resiliency in your list.
Yeah. So the Marines have not lost their, even if anything, they've gotten more forgiving because some of the cool stuff like the Inceptors and, like, I think that may be the first time on the show I've ever called them the right name.
Yeah. I'm proud of you.
And the Aggressors have gotten, you know, an additional wound, and, you know, Centurions, I think, have four wounds now. I think they had three before.
Did they go up too? Oh my gosh. Can you imagine a six man Centurion squad popping transhuman physiology when it gets shot at? I mean, it's so survivable. Two up. They got a two up already. Put them in cover.
With toughness five. So yeah. That's even getting more value out of your transhuman.
That's crazy talk. That makes them just way more survivable and way more viable, I think.
But every unit we're talking about, it seems like everyone everywhere is talking about any unit has that conversation, right? What about this with this?
And that's the great thing about Marines Space right Marines right now. And the thing is, Space Marines have always been, I'm not going to say, like, you know, they're always like the best thing out there because they haven't been. They've been pretty good, but they're not winning GTs, right? But they've always been pretty versatile. And I think now they're even more versatile than they've ever been at any time, you know? So it's, you know, when you build your list, I feel like now you're not having to build towards a specific gimmick because they're just all around good units in so many situations.
So Ricky, it sounds like you think that you're on the second half of what I said earlier. You think that the hair strength of the book is enough to do work.
Okay. I think so. And then you use your command points to address the strengths of other armies instead of having to, you know, instead of having to have this one strategy and play it every single time. I feel like now more than ever, Space Marines are able to, you're able to put your army down on the table and then, you know, it's going to be strong already. And then you're going to use your command points to shore up whatever weakness your army is going to have against your opponent. It is kind of how it seems to me now. So
you're imposing your will on the game rather than having to be reactive and survive.
Yeah.
And there are other some pregame stuff that we haven't talked about. The chapter master upgrade that you can do. Yeah, that's a 2 command point stratagem. You can make an intercessor squad of veteran intercessors, giving them an additional attack and leadership.
Nice.
I'm all about it.
Well, that's a 1 command point for a squad for 5 or under squad. If it's a 10, that's 2 command points. You know, this is just, you know, things you can burn before the game even starts. So, you know, I'm still, you know, basically talking about why was I even considering a brigade before? But I don't think brigade's the answer. I mean, we kind of muddled through it, you know, and we had some good stuff. Definitely had 3 of the Invictors in there. I'm a big fan of that unit. And put the Inceptors in there because it had success with their bolters. I mean, just so much applied firepower. And we were building this again towards Black Templar, so I was thinking about things that could come down and then be in someone's face. Because you can come down with those guys with a small footprint, 3-man squad. I think they're 40 mil bases. So it's still a 3-inch. Maybe 3.5-inch circle that you need to come in down on, but you can still squeeze them in places and then shoot something with all the bolters and then charge into something else.
Yeah, I love them. Anybody that doesn't like bolter inceptors, I don't know what planet you're on, because for a Marine player, they, especially if you're going all Primaris like I like to do, they are fantastic. They do exactly what you need them to do when they come down. I love them. I'll never say an unkind word about Inceptors. Now, I would have before they dropped points. You remember when they first came out? Oh my gosh, they were so overpriced. They weren't worth having. And ever since the price drop on those, they have been one of my favorite units to have. A unit that I am always concerned about when I see a Marine player with Inceptors. I always want to know where he's putting them and what I have near what he's going to put them down near. But and now with the ability for those bolters to go to -2, that gets real scary. So
they're such great character killers. I mean, back in the day when Eldar or Regan shop, they would always put a Farseer or a Warlock or Autarch or something like out in the wind and be like, drop down, hose that dude down. Pick up a quick kill point.
Yeah, somebody always has those soft backfield objective holders or something like that, and that's what I love a squad of Bolter Inceptors for. Is, you know, they just throw away unit on a backfield objective behind, you know, out of line of sight, and think nobody's going to get to it. And then, you know, you can use Inceptors to dig them out. I like that a lot. And in the plasma Inceptors are bonkers.
In this Theory Brigade also had 3 drop pods in it. And, you know, 65 points for an objective grabber. And we talked about it on the last show, I won't beat it to death. But I think that it's a bargain buy for what it is. I mean, there's a sack of wounds that your opponent has to deal with and can score points. In almost any mission set, you're scoring points just by existence.
Just remember, though, 1 crew trumps that.
I guess
1 crew is all it takes to shut that drop pod down.
And also you're giving your opponent a stable charge thing. You know, they can charge it, they can hide out in close combat. And then if they're one of these things like a Tyranids or a Gene Stealer or whatever, they can. And there's other things too now, you know, with stratagems that can fall back and still do things. You know, you're surrendering some momentum to your opponent. So I think if you're in that situation, so if you bring that down too early, then you're surrendering that momentum element to make it easier for them to do what they want to do. But, you know, you with the tactical reserves rule suspended for these things, you can bring them down turn 5 or 6 where that just isn't a reality for them, and you get your late game objective grabs or your line breakers.
And there's another question that we're skirting around then, and it's related directly to people who are going to play pod heavy again if they do, or they pull their 30K for pods out of mothball or something and want to run them in 40K, and that's, are Marines a go-first army or a go-second army?
So what do you put in the pods, right?
I mean, you could theoretically put nothing, right? And just say, I'm going to know that I always have last turn, and I'm going to drop these pods where you can't kill them, and that's the argument for the FAQ, I think. But if you know that you have that option to take linebreaker or whatever, win a scenario that way, like, do you then start building your army as a Marine player to say, okay, I want to go second?
I'm just saying that you can put Thunder Hammers on Scout Sergeants.
Oh, you're the one saying that. Okay.
And put them, yeah, but you're not going to put, they got 2 attacks.
I'm not putting my name on that.
They had two attacks apiece. But you know, what do you put in the pods, right? That is the question, or anything. I mean, well, it's, naked pods is going to be a threat if you somehow crack the code about what you do with your other 1,800 points.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to come down to what the rest of your list is, because if you're really planning to take advantage of Devastator Doctrine, right? I would run empty pods and keep them off the table as long as I can, because the worst thing you could do is drop some pods down on the table, and here you are trying to shoot stuff off the table, and you've given your opponent a nice big model to charge and stay locked in combat with.
Yeah, for as long as they want. Yeah.
As long as they want, and your heavy weapons aren't touching it. So you got to be careful, because your pods are a liability, almost as much, if not more so, a benefit that you're going to hold that objective, but you're also giving your opponent an easy way. You're going to give them extra movement by charging. You're going to give them safe haven by being unable to shoot it. You can't back the pod out. I think if you got a lot of heavy weapons and you're going for a ranged thing, you've got a ton of Hellblasters in your list, and you have pods, your pods aren't coming down till the end of the game, because no way am I going to want my pod coming down and working against me.
True, but then you're also taking that into account. I mean, you know that going into the game is most likely, and that you're looking at the drop pod and you're looking at the contents, and let's just say you take 5 Stern Guard with 3 Combi Plasmas and 2 Plasmas or something, whatever the math is, so that you can kill X, right? Like, say, I really want this to be able to kill another drop pod or, you know, finish off X, right? You know that those are coming in as assault weapons, and so you're saying, okay, I know this drop pod comes in, I'm going to be in my Assault Doctrine on the last turn, so you're already kind of building in your mind like a go second, like counterpunch kind of ability in your list, right?
Well, I think most Marine armies, I mean, these days anyway, I mean, back in the day when you had free drop pods all over the place, sure, first turn was sick. But I feel like these days, especially with the rapid fire rules being what they are and the range that Space Marine armies typically work at, second turn seems to be a little more beneficial for us, or at least it always has been for me. If my, you know, typically, you know, I play Dark Angels, so like if my Black Knights haven't got shot off the table turn one, turn two has always been a much better turn for me, or going second has been much better because they have moved up into my rapid fire range. If you've got all the rapid fire weapons, I think a lot of times you're going to want to go second.
And also, I forgot to kind of factor in or mention Shock Assault. That's a new rule in the Angels of Death package. If the unit makes a charge move, is charged, or performs a heroic intervention, add 1 to the attack characteristic of the models in this unit until the end of the turn. So that Scout with Thunder Hammers, 3 attacks.
It sounds to me like Marines want to actually be in bigger squads than what we were talking about before. We're throwing around a lot of point savings methods to try to get down to 5-man squads, bare minimums. But I think the other side of that coin is, and to use example from a few editions ago, once upon a time, Gene Stealers were what, like 25 points apiece, and they had like no save, and you know, they were awful, right? But they were really the only assault element that Tyranids had for a long time. And so I would always take the Toxin Sacks order for the +1 strength. And so you're taking an already expensive unit and you're making it more expensive. And I say, well, okay, but I know that by the time this unit gets there, it's not 10 Gene Stealers, it's 3. And so I need those 3 to have a higher strength to get the desired effect when they actually make it. So to go back to Space Marines, rather than have 5 Marines that get there and there's just a Sergeant and 1 ablative wound left, we may be talking about taking, you may want a 10 10-man attack squad in a battalion, you know what I'm saying? To have a lingering capability to absorb the punch and play for the second turn, or to play to go second, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's also going to matter with your stratagems that you use, like how you plan on positioning them. A bigger aggressor, bigger aggressor squads means I can string them out a little farther and still be in range of my chapter master and my lieutenant to get the rerolls. And also, if I have a 6-man aggressor squad, or like Dark Angels, for instance, with Weapons of the Dark Age, you want max squads. If whatever's carrying plasma, you max it out so that you can maximize that stratagem. Transhuman physiology, you want it on. You want your squad as big as it can be, because if you're burning, what, 2 command points, it darn well better be worth it. So a 6-man aggressor squad with transhuman physiology is way better, or way more efficient than a 3-man squad, or, you know, a 10-man intercessor squad charging in. If you plan on making that intercessor squad veterans to get those extra attacks, you know, I think that one scales, though, right?
It does. It becomes 2 command points for the 10-man squad.
But for the most part, a lot of these stratagems are the same no matter how big your squad is. So depending on what stratagems you're planning on using, you really want to look at squad size when you're putting those together.
For going back to, I guess, the very beginning of the conversation, which would inherently make brigades that much harder to take for Marines, right?
Yeah. Give up on it.
Yeah. You're giving up on the brigade. So you're already saying, okay, I'm taking these bigger squads to then take battalions to then double down on certain strategies, right? Or stratagems, pardon me. So now we're kind of dialing in on my original question. We're walking ourselves into it, I think. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And that line of thinking is that the brigade is probably a bit of a pipe dream, and you're going to dilute yourself to where, I mean, yeah, you might be able to sit somewhere on the table and win some games within games objectives or progressive objectives because people just can't dig you out because you're burning some defensive stuff. But I don't see that as is too exciting, too interactive of a game.
Yeah, I don't even think you'll even do that. I don't think it'll be an interactive game at all, because there won't be a game. I think
that's not the way. If you're playing in missions, that's not the way it works. You can do that. We've seen that happen. That is an effective strategy of just existing on the table and scoring some points. Like that.
Once upon a time, 60 tactical Marines was a hard army to beat, right?
Yeah, I mean, and
you
really
throw that into Iron Hands with the 5+ invulnerable, or not 5+ invulnerable, with the Feeling of Pain, and then the Overwatch, and then the stratagems to let other units Overwatch, and the other units are now 10 man, or they're intercessors and they're shooting double. Now you've got yourself a completely reactive army that's just manpower, and you're just like, come at me, bro. Yeah. And it could be a thing. I haven't mapped it out. I pulled that one out of my pocket just now. But
if it works, it would be great, because I could just get drunk and just stand there rolling dice while giggling. So that may be the kind of army I need to play.
That's very possible with Marine and Chaos Demons. It's very possible. A mandatory auto include is a Chaplain with a jump pack. The litanies that this thing that it gets are pretty strong, and you can, you know, that a chaplain's a good candidate for the additional warlord trait to get some extra benefits.
Yeah, he's bananas.
Yeah. So the Canticle of Hate, if this litany is inspiring, add 2 to charge rolls made for friendly chapter units while they're within 6 inches of the model. In addition, when a friendly chapter unit makes a pile-in or consolidate move within 6 inches of the models that unit can move up to an additional 3 inches. This is not cumulative with other abilities that add to a unit's charge roll or increase the distance it can pile in and consolidate. So it's got that little catch-all in there for the other things that let you consolidate 3 extra inches. There's one of the build-your-own traits and the doctrines. Or sorry, I don't want to confuse the terms. The build-your-own chapter tactics that you can move some extra inches in the consolidation. So, you know, again, going into my, you know, Black Templar idea, but it really works with any Marines. But the Black Templars get the reroll charge. You know, so now you're looking at a 7-inch charge. So if you were to drop in with something or teleport in with something, you know, you guys were kicking around the ideas of even like cataphractic terminators or assault terminators teleporting in with the ability to, I mean, say 9 inches away. But when you're trying to get a 7 and a reroll, that's a pretty reliable charge.
Yeah, I mean, that's the entire Gene Steel occult like methodology is Rock Sol's rerolling 7-inch charges, right?
Pretty much, yeah, or 3-inch charges, case may be sometimes.
And remember, one of the scariest things about putting Terminators on the table is them failing that charge and then being stuck out there and getting shot off the table. And so, you know, all the and you know, you kind of have to factor that into their points cost and is that risk worth it? And with Black Templars now, you're already going to hit like a truck, and now they're more reliably getting in there. And I think Cataphractia Terminators may have a place when you can reliably get them in there. I think that's potentially very solid.
I don't want to endorse that, but I think it is a decent idea to build for at least the to hatch it, right? But let's think also, you get this Chaplain with a jump pack, that you pop the litany at the beginning of your turn. And there are some litanies that do target either himself or a specific unit or whatever within a certain amount of inches. This, he does the litany, and then when it's time to charge, then anyone who's within 6 inches gets the benefit of that. So, you know, let's say you start your Invictor dreadnoughts up in their concealed positions, then you throw the Chaplain up there, and now he's within, you know, even if you have to advance them, you don't care. You're just trying to get them that +2 charge.
Yeah.
From their concealed positions. Like, it's strong. I think it's real strong. I think the Chaplain is pretty much an auto include in the Space Marines.
If you're building an assault forward army, I don't think, know how you avoid taking him.
He's not bad counter assault either. I mean, all Marines are pretty good at attack, especially with the shock assault stuff. That's going to be a counter charge unit. You're going to make them, you're going to turn things that are, I mean, unless intercessors have 2 base attacks, right?
Yeah, sergeant with 3. So 5 man is 11 attacks, I think.
Yeah, well, +1 now per dude. Like that's, and then when you throw in the Chaplain's ability to buff that even more, then you're doing what Josh, you were saying earlier, is giving them that gas to make an impact even when they're a smaller unit size.
Yeah.
Yeah, people usually underestimate a 5-man intercessor squad. You know, they're
on the table for.
Yeah, you never see them, and people charge them, and then everyone forgets that hey, that's 11 attacks. It goes up to 12 now base, or 12 now because you can give the sergeant a chainsword, so it should be 12 attacks base, and then they've still got their pistols in addition to their bolt weapons, so you know they're hitting you in the shooting phase as well, and then more attacks. So I like intercessors a lot. I've always been a fan of them since they've come out, and now they've just got a few more tricks. So I'm still a fan of them.
Yeah, I mean it's, you know, they're solid. I mean, being able to sit just hang out with that smaller footprint for the 2+ save and cover, I found when I was running with the Blood Angels, I pretty much found they could always stay in cover.
Right.
And their gun, their bolt rifle, 30-inch rapid fire, also gets the benefit of the bolter drill and stuff. I mean, they have some play. And 17 points apiece, they are.
I think that's right. Yeah.
17 points apiece.
I've been all about intercessors since the Vigilist book came out. I've been picking them up as the other half of the other boxes when the market's been relatively flooded with them for the last year when they've been doing, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Because Primaris have been the other half of pretty much every release for the last year. And, but no one is running them. And so you could actually get them pretty decent rates. So I've been picking them up, and I decided to go ahead and build Khalgar, and he's sort of a Primaris, you know, Ultramarines army. I knew it wasn't at the time like the most competitive, but that's the direction I'm looking at going right now. Looking at running just, the Honor Guard Khalgar for the CP regeneration. And then a Chaplain with them, probably an Apothecary, just running like a bully unit of like characters and a super heavy detachment, and then trying to run as many intercessors as I can and for the Vigilist, the veteran intercessors where I can switch combat tactics. So I can jump out of combat and do like modified hit and runs with White Scars. I can jump out, do a hit through the extra overwatch and then charge again. Those kind of shenanigans with the increased like assault bolters and stuff. Like I'm looking at trying some shenanigans like that. I don't know if it'll be competitive, but I always like to be a little bit off the meta.
The intercessor sergeants have their own war gear chart about what they can take, and it's chainsword, power fist, power sword, and thunder hammer.
So and the thunder hammer's new, right?
Intercessor sergeant upgrades sprue sometime soon, hopefully.
Because remember, they had that Imperial Fist upgrade sprue that came with the holiday box, and it was like the only way that you got an intercessor power fist, right? Yeah, we may potentially be seeing an upgrade sprue that gives us more weapons options.
Yeah, the Thunderhammer.
They don't want us converting Thunderhammers because they'd be too small. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they would scale, right?
Thunderhammer's got 2 points, one for characters. If you put it on a character, it's 40 points. That is significant.
That's a chunk.
For a non-character, it's 16 points.
Is there an upgrade relic Thunderhammer at all, where you can like pay for the one and you swap it? Is there anything like that?
I did not see a relic Thunderhammer. No, I did not. Okay. There's relic Crozius, which is very strong. Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back and talk about some more of this stuff.
All right.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Still got Ricky and Josh here.
Hey.
Folks, if you have not checked out those sweet objective markers from Muzo Minis, please do. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. They have a die emblem on one side, numbered 1 through 6. On the other side, they have the FTN Rocks logo, Rocks Glass logo. That is a great way to support our sponsor you just heard from and the show. So please do. Please get them. If you use objectives in your games, if you use numbered objectives, or you just want cool-looking objectives, please check them out and tell your friends.
I want an objective marker with a number 7 on it, just so people will ask me why.
It's the relic. Right. Speaking of relics, though, the Teeth of Terror.
Chainsword.
Sorry, the Teeth of Terror.
Rogaldorn's chainsword, right?
My Southern came out for a second. It is a chainsword, but it's plus 1 strength, neg 2 AP, 2 damage apiece, and you make 3 additional attacks if you have the weapon.
Dang, girl.
It's wrecking custodes. That's what that is.
Not neg 2 AP, you know, and this is not counting, you know, assault doctrines and that kind of stuff or white scar stuff. I mean, I think it's a solid piece.
You bury that on somebody in a squad somewhere. That's not bad. That's worth a command point.
In the supplemental books, there's the special issue war gear stuff that you can actually put on sergeants and stuff, with it. You have to burn a command point to be able to do it, but you can put stuff, put some of these things, or those things on characters. And it's not Teeth of Terra, but it's other things like, artificer armor and that kind of stuff. Going to jump us off on a different topic, but
no. Is there anything that raised your eyebrow?
Not specifically, but it's nice to have the option, especially if we're talking about like building out like specific tricks and stuff. I mean, like the whole idea we were talking about in the pre-show is how do you make a forward threat army to take advantage of some of this stuff and then have the command points to fuel it. And then I think we're determining that the brigade is, you know, pie in the sky. More battalion is where it's at, and I don't know that you'll have enough to splash around to the secondary relic chart. It's called special issue war gear.
So if you put on your ITC goggles and you're looking at the table and the terrain like that, right? Or do you, me, for what it's worth, and I'm not some great ITC player, but I've played the missions, you know, just to check them out. I feel like you can still get away with maybe hedging your bets and relying on terrain to block line of sight to give you the extra turns you're talking about. I'm not trying to bring it back to what I was saying earlier, but I am.
No,
that's just it. You're going to go second army.
With terrain, if you're playing in, you know, what they refer to as the magic box environment, then you have a lot more options open to you with army list designs because your units become impossible to shoot from most angles without flyers.
Right, and that may also shift you away mentally from building an all devastator doctrine army, right? All heavy. You know you're going to have to go dig someone out, so you're going to want some of those assault types.
See, I mean, I think the secret to the Marines is going to be someone that they're going to be that mid-range, slightly better than mid-range threat army. They're going to be that 24-inch mess you up army.
Yeah.
I don't see it as being super low range fire, especially now, you know, with so many things you can put up there. I mean, like the Phobos stuff, you know, the grab shoot insertion, the concealed position. I mean, so much of this book now has, I mean, let's Terminators. I mean, again, not necessarily advocating the Terminators, but I'm saying that, I'd say, I don't know what the percentage of units in this book are that can manipulate deployment, but it's high.
Right.
Which is what you expect out of Marines, right? Plus the pods.
Yeah. And you're going to put Marines wherever you want them. I mean, if you want a Marine somewhere, there's a unit you can take to put it there. So it's up to you. If we look at it these days, there's not that much long range firepower from Marine list. I mean, the Executioner has come out recently that's got it, but when you're looking at just the Primaris options, it's you're talking midfield shooting is where they're really going to shine. If you bring in some of the legacy units, you know, the Predators and stuff like that, you're still getting the shots, but I think Predators are kind of
Right. Probably. I think we kind of touched on it earlier. I think we're in a world now of Laz Fusils, you know, taking two or three turns to get the job done, you know, but plinking some chip damage, you know, and then kind of what we talked on earlier, and that's until we can get some definitive updates potentially from Forge World to really maybe fill some of those gaps.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at Laz Fusils, they're pricey, you know, they look expensive, but at the same time, it is hard to kill an Eliminator in a camo cloak sitting in cover. It's way harder to kill that than it is some of these vehicles just sitting out in the open, so... Yeah, it may take a little longer for them to get it done, but they're going to sit on the table a lot longer, I think.
It's just a priority challenge, right? When you're talking about Paul's janky dreadnought guy jumping out of the bushes with a heavy flamer in your face, turn one. You know, like, what are we really trying to do? Deny the chip damage or let that guy just start rampaging through?
Yeah. Also, someone paint one of those up like the Kool-Aid Man.
Hey, when the Blood Angels get them, no problems. Yeah. No problems.
I don't want to hear you complaining, Paul, because you know that thing is coming, like, geared out with heavy flamers along with everybody else in the heavy. I think that the Blood Angels are going to, when they see the heavy flamers on turn one, because it's, you get the Devastator Doctrine is on heavy flamers too, right?
Yeah, it's a heavy weapon.
And Blood Angels are the only Marines that can take heavy flamers in their attack squads and stuff, right?
Yep.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. They're the only
ones
that got
them. So just, yeah, here it comes, Paul, prediction. you're going to be building some heavy flamer tactical Marines.
I don't currently have any of those, I don't think. That's not true. That's Paul, not true. I've got two.
With all the stuff we're getting, do you think the Black Templars are going to be a better assault army than Blood Angels?
No.
The Blood Angels have, I mean, like, if we just, I mean, we're talking predictions, right? But, or at least speculation. The Blood Angels have that plus one to wound.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Right now, are Black Templars better than Blood Angels? Well, I think.
Okay, let me tell you, right now, they get something for free across their whole army that Blood Angels have to hemorrhage command points on, and that's the reliable charge.
Yeah, yeah.
So right now, absolutely they are, because you're going to get to do it more often. So, you know, I may only get into combat with one unit. You're going to get in combat with six of your units, and two of them are, you know, two or three of them are these face-wrecking dreadnoughts.
And still have command points left, yeah.
Without spending a dime.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, so it'll remain to be seen, I think. So I reserve the right to change my opinion.
Oh, no, I got full faith it's going to all work out. I'm just saying that, right, I mean, you asked the question, what is it right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, yeah, like, I think right now, at this instant, okay. I think soon as
Blood Angels moment, get it yeah.
Up, yeah.
I was going to say, because, you know, when Imperial Fists get their book and the successors come out, you know, I just have a ton of faith that, I'm not going to say Grimaldus, but, you know, they're going to get a character, and they probably do Grimaldus again.
Well, they'll have probably the same characters that they're sculpts right. for. You know.
And who knows if they'll get some kind of Crusader buff to their Land Raider Crusaders, because that was their joint back in the day, right? And, you know, Crusader squads, or is that what they're called? The blended you're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, they may push you in a direction where you're running an old 5th ed, you know, style Black Templar book, which a lot of people were thrilled about.
Weren't the Crusader squads, couldn't you put them up in like a group of 20? Could you put them in a squad of 20?
You can. I think 10 of them had to be the Neophytes scouts.
Okay. But can you still do that? Or
they go to 30? Was it 20 Marines and then?
Something insane. And then I know, obviously, people were, you know, depending on your areas doing whatever shenanigans with Land Raider Crusaders if they thought they were good or not back in the day.
I'm just thinking from a stratagem standpoint, if you get the Crusader squads again, these big blobs that you can pop these stratagems on.
Transhuman physiology.
Could you imagine 30 scouts with transhuman physiology? I'm charging that knight. Don't care. You know, what are you going to do?
That's definitely getting a thunder hammer for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That sergeant's definitely getting the thunder hammer. So yeah, I think we'll see some. I'm hoping we see some really fun stuff come out of these supplements.
You think the same thing we might see, like Neophytes instead of Neophytes, it's an actual tactical Marine, and the Primaris is his little buddy.
Yeah,
that would be an update, right? That would be like future style. That would be interesting.
I don't think we'll see that. I just think it'd be fun. You know, talking about the size comparison.
That would be cool.
Yeah, look, I'll take it. Like, it sounds great. But
as long as it looks good. good on the table, man. I'm not, of course, I'm not, I'm probably upsetting the fringe blood Black Templar players out there who want to play their army from 5th edition that hasn't changed in 10 years. But
it's got that feel, though, right? It's a very thematic army. That's part of the one thing that I'm drawn to.
Concept. Or what if they just had combined all three? You get all three of them in one, right? So now we got some intercessors in there. We got a scout sergeant. We got, you know, whatever.
Oh, very Death Watchy or whatever.
Yeah. And then throw a librarian in there. Trigger.
Hey, fair talk right now is that it's not currently prohibited.
Paul, we told you not to mention that. Like, we told you, like, you're gonna lose listeners when you start talking about putting librarians in a Black Templar army.
I was flipping the pages, you know, like trying, like, oh, because, you know, I'm in brewing, like, what would be a cool BT list just to throw on the table. And again, that's what led us on the path and, you know, run through things. Now, things that we talked about in the pre-show that it didn't occur to me was like dipping into the well of stuff like Vanguard Vets or Stern Guard or, you know, whatever things that come base with at least one more attack and fit and drop pods if necessary.
And access to a lot of white, like, good war gear now.
Yeah.
And are actually not unaffordable models for a design, but, you know, specific tasks they're supposed to be able to accomplish.
Points wise, yeah, not terrible. But, you know, you can put a librarian in there currently, although, yeah, I think you'd upset the people.
Like we said, the Emperor's a psyker, man, so they need to get their act together.
You get to have one in the whole universe, and it's him. The rest of them are strictly not good. you know, maybe I'm missing something with the relics, but the only other one that super jumps out at me is another weapon. It's the Benediction of Fury, which is the Chaplain upgrade for the Crozius. It's a melee weapon, +2 strength, -2 AP, also -3. So it is basically an extreme beater. And then while resolving an attack made with this weapon, an unmodified roll of a 6 inflicts one mortal wound on the target in addition to any other damage.
Yeah, he's effectively the loyalist version of the chainsword guy, right?
You talking about like Chainlord from Chaos?
Because you can buy the command ability upgrade.
It's you can pop it to where this guy, the Chainlord's doing like mortal wounds on 4+, you know, like veterans and other stuff. And maybe it's 5+, but it's a lot. Plus but you can get him up. You can get the Chaplain up the same number of attacks and he's 2 damage.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're trading mortals for damage.
I'm sorry, 3 damage with this weapon. Sorry, 3.
That's bananas.
Yeah. And then plus, you know, you give him the Warlord trait that gives him +1 extra attack, +1 strength. So, yeah, it just starts to tick up. There's a librarian. There's a psycho power. Look, if you have
swinging Gilliman fists at this point, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Shock assault. Yes. Assault doctrine.
That's much, you know, like, name.
it can be. I mean, that people have, I think, already cracked the code on that. And I think that when you start to. I don't think you get diminishing returns on investing in this guy, like when you're throwing him into, I don't know, say a fat unit of custodes or a knight or something that you need to, or you need to beat somebody down that has tons of wounds to, grotesques, you know, that kind of stuff. But I think that on average, you're not going to need that total investment to still get a lot of value out of him.
I always like to measure stuff up against, like, what, you know, what would it do against Mortarion? You know, like, assuming Mortarion gets to you and he's taking a couple of chip damage. And he didn't heal at all. Can this guy go in there and reasonably, with some support, tear down Mortarion with a fight twice? Right? Sounds like it's. I haven't mapped it out, but sounds like it's potential.
Yeah. I think
it can take down Mortarion. It can take down a knight. You know, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah, especially get the drop on him. And if he's coming in swinging, you know, rerolling his misses,
his litanies and all that jam.
Yeah, I mean the litanies are going. You could even pop a litany to give him, you know, an additional attack even on there. So you're maximizing that extra damage.
Yeah, he's super spicy. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. I think 2 chaplains is probably the way to go. Because one, one litany is the other with a good one, you know. So you
you're such a gamer that way. Free command, chaplain, force. Okay, next.
And speaking of librarians, the obscurest discipline, you know, is for Phobos librarians. Now, I like some of the powers, but I'm torn on the mobility options of the Phobos librarian. I mean, you can't put him in a jump pack. You know, there's his transport options are limited also.
I mean, he's infiltrating, you know, I mean, that's
something.
Yeah, but I mean, then he's just walking around.
But there's the power to make him move twice. But, you know, why are you you know, it feels wasteful. I mean, really? I feel like depending on how you build your army, and if you're planning on coming down first turn and being up in somebody's face, then, hey, having him infiltrated up there to where he just steps out and starts buffing those guys
Talking about the minus one to hit, is that what we're going for?
And there's a power called Mind Raid.
Yeah, is that the one where you're hot about, Paul?
The minus one to hit?
The reason you want him, yeah. Are you looking at him for that ability, or is there something
else? I mean, just as an option of two different things. I wasn't necessarily attached to one thing or the other than the fact that Mighty Heroes is the regular librarius discipline. That's on the other side, you know, the regular librarian that gives the further buffs the chaplain, and since I think that's probably a slight bit overkill, then you might want to, you know, look at something that's a little bit more utility for the rest of your army. So that's why I'm even considering looking at the FOMO stuff. And then the Mind Raid, it lets you target models, do mortal wounds to them, and then have the potential of gaining a command point. So a way to kind of maybe mitigate not having the detachment innate command points, you can kind of get some back over the course of the game.
And so you just run him up behind a couple of those dreadnoughts and make him minus one to hit, and then buff the gain command points, and then just
profit.
Yeah, it seems good.
But we were having a lot of debate in the pre-show about the what other, like, when you guys talked me out of taking the librarian in the Black Templar list.
Trigger. That's for your own good. Yeah.
But the lieutenant, you know, the Phobos lieutenant or the Phobos captain for the Omni Scrambler, or going with a regular lieutenant, like a regular Space Marine lieutenant, to get the better war gear options. I think we decided, we came to a little bit of a conclusion that the regular lieutenant to get the benefit of the extra war gear option, not that 40-point Thunderhammer.
No.
But might have been a better option for what this list was doing now at the time, or what we wanted to see from the list. Yeah. Has your mind changed after we talked about it anymore? Librarian versus lieutenant versus captain to upgrade to a chapter master or whatever. Is that?
I think there's a strong argument for that ability to push people away from you to deny Gene Stealer cults their tricks. And like I was talking about, kind of over and over again, not to repeat, but the whole I'm planning on going second. That's even better, right?
Yeah, you don't want to get charged and bogged down and lose all your momentum before you ever go. And
well, you want to make sure that you get multiple shots on that Invictor's flame cannon.
Yeah.
While they're trying to charge you from 12 inches away. Like, oh, this unit's going to charge. Sorry, you failed. Take 5 casualties. Oh, you want to try to get cute with this unit over here? Okay, you just took some casualties. You might make it. It's a long bomb, but you still lose some people on the way in.
But if you're all, between that and then, like, for me, like, if I'm going to run Tigerius with Null Zone, or if I'm going to use the stratagem, or it opens up the stratagem to me to have the mutually supporting Overwatch. I think some of that's really strong too. And then I don't know, we didn't really discuss it at all. What about some of the innate abilities on the Flyno, the upgrades on that thing?
Yeah, we haven't dubbed into that too much.
Because I know there's some static abilities on that thing that seem kind of tasty.
You're talking about the Impulsor.
Yeah.
So it's a hover tank. Distances are always measured to and from the model's hull. Has the repulsor field. That is so underrated.
The -3 to charges or whatever it is.
-2 to charge. It's an assault vehicle. Sort of. So after the model moves in your movement phase, if this model did not advance, any units embarked aboard it can disembark. Units that do so cannot be chosen to charge that turn. This thing is toughness 7 with 11 wounds, which has a little bit of durability. And I'm bringing that up now because a model, you can get a shield dome. A model with a shield dome has a 4+ invulnerable save.
Yes. But that's just on itself, right? That doesn't do anything for units around it.
Yeah, just on itself. And the orbital comms array in your shooting phase, one model from your army with an orbital comms array that has not been used this battle can use it to call in an orbital barrage. If it does, select one point on the battlefield, roll a d6 for each unit within d6 of that point, subtracting one for the result if the unit is being a character on a 4+.
Yeah, it's the orbital strike.
Yeah. Well, on a 4+ unit, roll 4 suffers d3 mortal wounds.
Yeah, it's the old, there was a stratagem that used to do that, and then it wasn't the chapter master's ability for a long time previously.
It was. You could do, if you didn't move with your chapter master, you could launch a bomb.
That was 3 command points for that thing to do. So it's, orbital bombardment was a pain in the butt as far as stratagems go, and you never use it because it's 3 command points. When does anyone ever burn 3 command points for it? But here, you know, for 18 points, you can get this. And
yeah, Tau don't want any part of that with their castle.
Yeah, and it's not once per round or once per game or whatever it is, right?
this per tank.
Yeah, no. I'm saying like with the orbital bombardment stratagem, I feel like it's once per game, but I may be wrong on that. But you know, there's always a limit. You can't fire with your other weapons. You can't. I don't think you can move or something. I can't remember what it is.
You had to be on a bike or whatever.
Whatever it is for the stratagem, it nobody uses it, right? Well, here with the impulsor, you can have multiples of this. And let's say you took. I'm not saying that I would do this because I don't need them. But if you had four impulsors, that's four of these. Of these orbital comms arrays that you could do the barrage with. So, yeah, a Tau Castle with getting hit with potentially four of these, half their army's gone. That's something to think about as well, because it's not limited.
You can break down characters. You can break down characters really well with this.
Yeah.
Right, well, I thought there was something else that went with the Phobos, Paul. That's the only reason I didn't even ask you about it. I thought there was something that keyed in on a little buff that they had. No, I'm wrong.
Oh, well, I mean, it's still worth talking about. I mean, the thing is, it can hold, it's one of the only things that can hold Primaris.
Oh, don't get it wrong. It's six of my, aggressors are going in that.
No, they're not. Because it can't take Gravis or Jump Pack.
Yeah, no Jump Pack, no Gravis.
No aggressors, no Inceptors, no suppressors.
All I want to do is jump out with flamers and melt something.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, there's really just no good option for getting flamer aggressors there, because I think you can even the traditional repulsor is going to do five of them. I think can get five.
That, yeah, that way you can put a lieutenant in there or something.
Yeah, but yeah, like I'm trying to figure out what I would put in this thing because they can't charge out. If they could charge out, oh my gosh, like just throw some. Oh my gosh, I've just completely lost.
These things, what they can do is they could also block line of sight. I mean, these things are kind of wide bodies. You're going to be giving yourself some. You're going to be able to create some lanes of fire. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back, do a finishing move segment. Going to be a little bit of a retread of stuff that we talked about how to make Marines stand out, you know, or anything that is basically like one armor color or whatever. We're going to talk about how to make that stand out a little bit. I know you all got some ideas about that stuff. Yeah, I'm going to have a quick word from our sponsor. If you're looking for a place to play or how to play, or you want an easy way to bring up and take down a gaming table because you don't have a lot of space, listen in, and then we'll be right back doing the Finish Move segment.
We're sponsored by Firma Terra. With their study, lightweight and portable tables, you can make war anywhere. Please visit them at www.firmaterra.com.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, comment, and stuff. We've got a great kind of community in the YouTube comments. We also got some great exchange going back since we're doing this five-star review promotion, where if you leave us a five-star review in one of the aggregators, like it, whether it be iTunes or any of the places, if we catch it, we certainly read it on air. And today I want to read a couple from Canada.
Does it not just have five stars and then an A at the end of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely top shelf of the 40K podcast. These guys are entertaining and informative. Thank you so much. Something for everyone. Excellent variety of topics. It's even sometimes knowledgeable.
Sometimes. Yeah, but generous. I'll take it.
Yeah. Is it not bad, eh?
There you go. I knew it.
And then there's somebody recognizing that we are true fans of 40K, and that couldn't be any closer to the truth. You know, definitely I love the game and like sharing it with you guys and talking about it. And more reviews and reading reviews to come. Thank you all for leaving these five stars and the comments. Really brightens our day. Lets us know that we're, anyway, it's a good way for people to people will have an easier time finding us and listening to us the more you guys do that, and it means a lot to us for you, and I really appreciate it. So finishing moves. Like I said, a little bit of a recover on some of the things we talked about in previous finishing moves, but as people are painting maybe some models they didn't have before because they got a lot better, they got an extra wound, they got, you know, thunder hammers they didn't have before. Maybe something, you know, maybe you, like, for me, I can tell you that for years I struggled with painting red. I couldn't, or I probably painted my first three tack squads 17 times. I mean, that's really over. At least 3 or 4 times I painted those tax squads. They had 4, complete coats of paint on them because I wasn't happy with the way the red looked, either the shade or the highlights, if you could even call them that back then. Now I'm a lot proficient at it and I enjoy it. I can normally nail it in one, but I learned some things over the way to make that covered up my deficiency in the painting of the red. Like, for instance, the first evolutionary step I had when painting a marine, as I learned, they look a lot better when you paint their the tubing or the vents or the articulation points on their armor a different color. Like you paint them black and highlight them a little bit or something than the rest of the armor. They look a lot better. I didn't used to do that. Now everyone does it, right? But I didn't do that back then, and I didn't know to do it until I saw examples. I really came at it objectively about how can I make my stuff look better.
It just makes first off, you're dealing with marine armor, which is just a solid color, right? So if you don't go in there and give it some contrast, it just doesn't, it just all kind of blends together. And so when you go in there, just throw some black. I usually do a black on those joints, on the backs of the knees and all of that.
Yeah, in their elbows, the other side of their elbows, and sometimes at the wrist, you'll see them.
Yeah. And it just makes the brighter color of the armor, it just makes it pop more and it makes it stand out. And it's just another way to give Marines contrast, which is what you really got to do. You got to find some areas to add that contrast to make it pop and draw the eye to other areas other than just this big, in your case, a big just blob of red.
Yeah, red, or
in
my rectangle. Case,
just solid green on Dark Angels. So, find those little details that you can show. And gosh, just painting anything you paint on marine armor is going to pop, right? Because it's just one color. So when you paint the skulls on there, they stand out. When you paint the banding around the shoulder pads, it pops. It's real easy to make it look like you're doing a lot of work because you have that solid canvas of the armor. So every time you do any edge highlighting or anything on that, or paint the knee pad a different color.
That's it. So paint like the knee pad, not like with the Blood Angels, I had the crutch of falling back on the helmets. So, it's one thing I love the chapter, like Imperial Fist. A lot of people struggle with yellow or whatever. Maybe you're a super huge Salamanders fan and you're just terrible at painting green. Like this is like a real struggle with some hobby people out there. I get it. Same way with the BAs, but the helmets for Blood Angels, heavy weapons were blue, sergeants were yellow, the first company was gold. I got to kind of play with it and maybe make those look good where I was struggling with the red. So what you're talking about is painting a knee pad, you paint a forearm or Imperial Fist or a Crimson Fist. Mm-hmm. Some kind of iron hands or whatever. Maybe you're really bad at painting black, but you can nail those iron hands.
So first of all, I'm glad you brought up black, because I know Carl's out there struggling to figure out how to do his Black Legion stuff right now, or for 40K.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of the air color. There's an anthracite is really good, and then you just wash it back down with a null. Super easy, very, very calm, and then you can edge highlight with the same color again. So throw that out to Carl, because I've been listening to him. But and I'll probably see him at Nova coming up. Going back to Marines, in my opinion, the sort of perfect simple challenge, right? They're very broad surfaces, striking poses, animated faces, and or not, right? Helmeted, et cetera, but they're the perfect way to apply color theory. And so if you have a color wheel, you have your basic color, and then you always going to want to apply a complementary color immediately to the left or to the right of that color, and then the contrasting color diametrically opposite, right, on the color wheel. So you apply your base color of your marine, okay, and then you want to have what I always try to do is the triangle effect, right? You've got either the casing of the bolter to apply either the complementary or the contrast color to. So that's why you have red in certain editions for ultramarines, right? And then the faces, and then the face has all the animation, the color, it stands out, it pops, regardless of whatever the color marine is. So you start to build yourself almost like a triangle. The other part of the triangle can be what you're talking about, Paul, and that's the squad marking on the knee, the chapter symbol, a detail, a purity seal. It's so that your eye is looking at one place and then naturally has a place to go to another and then to another. And then in a perfect world, you're looking at that model, like from like when you take a photo of a model, you always want to find the picture or the pose slash angle that displays the most detail while capturing like the action that's going on. So you want to apply those three, that triangle, if you will, in within that angle of the model, right? So that's why you don't see a lot of people spending crazy amounts of time on the details on the backpack, right? So if you're getting the front, so when people are trying to say, what am I going to do? A lot of people say faces and bases, but I say faces and bases all day long. But then if you can go back and get that triangle on your model on a Marine, you'll be really pleased with it. And then
so once like again, shoulder pad, bulger.
Right. And then the face or something, once again, like we said, on the base. You put a skull on the base, it's popped with some white or, you know, early or okay, scrap everything I just said and you come at it from a different angle and you say, hey, do I want to take a 30K approach? And do I really want to heavily weather these guys and make them just look tattered? Sort of like your Mechanicum stuff, right? See, Marines weather extremely well because they have a lot of broad surfaces that can have a lot of chipping and highlighting on that. And then you can come in with the hobby, the pigment powders, and you can really come in with some rust or just it's an alien world. And you come in hot with some different, you know, pigment colors to really get that contrast as well. And
you can throw some texture on there with some of that stuff.
Exactly.
So it's distracting from the fact that you did a miserable job with the red arm.
Or that you just don't like to paint eyes, you know, or you don't like to paint you have a thing about people not wearing their helmets and having helmet discipline 40,000 years from now. So you want to have helmets. It gives you another way to add detail or take away. It's fast. It's very simple and it can be striking as well.
That's a good tip. And then don't be afraid to use decals. Ricky, I know you're
use
a big fan.
Use the decals. Yeah, I mean, I love decals.
They're in almost every box. And if you don't have enough, you can normally pick them up from aftermarket sellers or even like in Facebook groups and stuff. Because sometimes I know I'm tracking down. I need three more number sevens, whatever.
Find the friend that has been playing for 10 years and he'll have a box of all the decals he hasn't used. That's just the way it works.
So two things about decals I'll say, and then I'll get off my soapbox. One is when you're applying them to shoulder pads, apply them lower than you think. A lot of people try to put them on the top where the bend is. Mm-hmm. And they don't lay flat, and no amount of microset or microsol or tricks or gimmicks or cutting is going to fix that. Generally speaking, people try to apply them too high on Space Marines. Drop them down a little bit, get them closer to the bottom sort of banding, if you will, and you'll be happier with your effect. And then also, if you hate decals, I always tell people take your color and paint over them. Mm-hmm. Okay? It just like if they're the white Ultramarine you. You don't have to trace it perfectly, but take some white and go right back over that thing. Just draw
you can
the
do
U
it
on
even
there.
Just a little bit, and you'll yes. You might still get that painted look that you want. I mean, I don't have a problem with the decals most of the time with a Salva set, and then when you put a seal on your model, like once you even out the finish across the whole model, I'm not bothered by them at all.
Just a bonus pro tip: don't overlook decals as just a way to cheat. Certain decals have shapes that you might have a hard time with. If you have a hard time painting a circle, because believe me, circles are some of the hardest things you could ever try to tackle drawing or painting, look at some of the skull decals that you have, and you cut off the eyes, the nose, and the bottom part of the skull. It leaves you with that circle. So if you guys need a simple source of shapes, look within. If you just need a triangle, cut that tactical arrow in half and keep the top of it. Maybe you need the square you've got, or a diamond. You take the bottom half of that tactical arrow and you've got your square. You turn it on its end and now you've got the diamond you need. So just don't overlook what you have as a source of stuff if you're willing to put in the effort to apply the decals.
There you go. That's the stuff that's gonna it really will make the Marines jump out. You know, they are just from a distance that they can look. Kind of like a washed out, whatever the primary color of their armor is. Now it looks awesome, especially, when you're at that 3 feet away. Yeah. But this is the kind of stuff that will really help the stuff jump off the table. And on that note, we'll wrap it up.
All right, gentlemen.
Yeah, good times.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You guys have a good rest of your night.
All right, take care.
Good night, world.